Bruchim Abba'im. Welcome everybody to the Monday night's Parsha Shir. Tonight is Lamud Sivan. It's the first day of Rosh Chodesh Tammuz, corresponding with the English calendar, the 22nd day of June. We are going to be talking about another tragic story that happened to Klal Yisrael, and we are feeling the repercussions until today. The story of Korach and his cohorts is a story that we must never forget, and it's a story that lives with us as long as we are driven by our ego, by kina, taiva, and kavod, by an appetite for glory and honor. And the story of Korach is the story that should inspire us to stay far as possible from any kind of machloikis, any kind of argument that we might in any way get attracted or fall into. Let's begin the parsha. Parsha's Korach begins with the following words: Vayikach Korach ben Yitzhar ben Kohath ben Levi. And Korach took the son of Yitzhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dasan and Aviram b'nei Aliyav, V'oin ben Peles, b'nei Uvein. All of these together came and stood up against Moshe Rabbeinu. The pasuk continues, V'yakumu l'fnei Moshe v'anashim m'bnei Yisrael, chamishim m'masayim. They stood up to make a rebellion together with 250 other people who are very well known and respectable people. The pasuk says, Nesiei Eda, Kriyei Moed, Anshei Shem. These were princes, leaders, and people with a reputation. Anshei Shem, people with a wonderful name. Vayikalu al Moshe v'al Aharon, and they assembled against Moshe and Aharon. Vayomer, and they said, Alayhem to them, Rav Lachem, enough with you, enough of your taking the honors. Kichol ha'edo kulam kedoshim, all of the congregation, all of Israel are holy. Uvesocham Hashem, together with Hashem. Umadua tisnasu al kahal Hashem, and why do you raise yourself above the congregation of Hashem? Vayishma Moshe, and Moshe hears this, Vayipol al panav, and he falls on his face. These are the first few psukim of the parsha. But to get a better background, let's go into Rashi explains it as well. What was behind that motivated Korach into such a rebellion in public to put down Moshe and Aharon and literally caused an unbelievable upheaval in Klal Yisrael? So Rashi explains there was a question of honor that he felt, that Korach felt that he should have been given. Going back to the time of Har Sinai, Moshe Rabbeinu was appointed to be the leader of Klal Yisrael. Hashem wanted Aaron to be the Kohen Gadol, but Korach felt that he should be the Kohen Gadol. But he would not dare to start up and create a commotion then, because if he would have made a comment about that, they would have stoned him. But what happened that really sparked the entire rebellion was that later on, when Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu to appoint the Nasi of Shevet Levi, that was the the cousin of Korach, you're talking about over here that his honor was bypassed. So let's explain exactly the family tree over here that is the source of this rebellion. Kohath is the family name. Levi had three sons. Kohath was one of them. And Kohath had four sons, Amram, Yitzhar, Hebron, and Uziel. Well, here we have Amram with his two sons, Moshe and Aaron. Moshe became the leader, and Aaron was the Kohen Gadol. Yitzhar had Korach. He had Nepheg and Zichri. And Hebron is not mentioned in this argument, and Uziel had a son by the name of Elitzaphon. Hashem wanted Elitzaphon, the son of the fourth in line for an honor, and not to give Korach the honor of becoming the Nasi. This aggravated Korach to no end. He felt that his pride was deeply wounded. How dare they skip me? If Amram, my uncle Amram, was the first oldest son of Kohath, and Yitzhar, my father, was the second son of Kohath, then I should have been second in line. Why was it given to Elitzaphon ben Uziel, going all the way down and skipping me and not give honor to my family, my father? He took this personally, and he wanted to create a rebellion to put Moshe Rabbeinu down. The truth is that he would have started this rebellion earlier, but he looked for a time where Moshe Rabbeinu would be vulnerable. Now, of course, as I mentioned before, he wouldn't dare start up with Moshe Rabbeinu at the time when Aaron was instituted as a Kohen Gadol. They would have stoned him to death. How dare you start up with Moshe Rabbeinu? He was the one that brought the Torah down from Har Sinai. The honors were given to Moshe Rabbeinu with no end. How dare would you think anyone would go start a rebellion then? He knew it wasn't a wise time to start a rebellion. So he waited when things were going a little bit negative for Moshe. The Ramban explains, brought down in the Sefer Chidekel in length, that the vulnerability of Moshe Rabbeinu was this time, after the incident of the Meraglim, where the Meraglim sinned, and the Bnei Yisrael were punished, that they were not going to go to Eretz Yisrael. Everybody over 20 were going to die in the desert. The Jewish people's feeling towards Moshe Rabbeinu was at an all-time low, because they felt that Moshe Rabbeinu could have prayed for their success and their atonement, just like he prayed for their atonement at the time of the Egel. He could have prayed for their atonement in the time over here at the Meraglim, and he didn't. And there was reason for that, because their avir was such that it wouldn't have been able to happen. He was able to pray, and he did pray for them to at least live out their years in the desert, and that they shouldn't be wiped out immediately. But that wasn't good enough for them. In the meantime, there was a very, very low feeling of Moshe Rabbeinu in the public eye, and this was fuel for the argument for the rebellion that Korach was looking for. And as a result, Korach went ahead and made an open rebellion. Now, you have to understand, Korach was looking for more honor than he even had. Here is a man who was the wealthiest person in Israel. Here is a man who was carrying the Aron on his shoulder. He was given the honor of becoming, of carrying the Aron with such honor, how could a person think otherwise? But Korach had this unbelievable craving for honor and glory, and he wasn't happy with the fact that he didn't become the Nasi, and he wanted to become Nasi. And the way he was going to become Nasi is going to become, we make a rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. And here we hear that have the story as it continues. Moshe Rabbeinu told them he wanted to become Kohen Gadol. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, listen, Aaron HaKohen tomorrow will stand in front of the Ohel Moed, in front of the sanctuary, with all of your 250 cohorts, and you're going to have them have their fire pans with ketores, and there'll be a fire coming down from Shemayim, and only one person will live. There's nobody else will remain alive. And Korach will be there with his 250 men and Aaron HaKohen. And they all were prepared to put their lives on the line and to start putting down Moshe Rabbeinu. This is how it started. And as we know, the night right before was a night where Korach started gaining momentum against Moshe Rabbeinu by ridiculing the mitzvahs of Moshe Rabbeinu, the famous mitzvahs of tzitzis. He purposely picked the mitzvah so to ridicule Moshe Rabbeinu. You know, tzitzis need a blue thread. Yes, it does. What would happen if the entire garment would be blue? Does it still need a blue thread? So he says, yes, the Torah says, Al psil techeles v'ayol lechem letzitzis. And he ridicules it. How could that be? If one thread is enough for the whole garment, why can't the whole garment that is blue need a thread hanging from its fringe? And people started to laugh at Moshe Rabbeinu. And then he continued with the example of a mezuzah. A mezuzah contains a parchment that contains the Shema. And if this would be on the doorpost, this would protect the person in his house. So Korach asked, what would happen if the entire house was filled with Sifrei Torah? Do you still need a mezuzah on the doorpost? Moshe Rabbeinu says, Al mezuzah beitzecha v'yisharecha. And again, Korach put shame to Moshe Rabbeinu, saying, you're making this up. It doesn't make any sense. And he tried to do whatever he could to ridicule Moshe. The result is he was successful. Because with Litzanus is like rust to metal. Rust can eat away metal and destroy it. Litzanus can take anything serious and dissolve it and destroy it, and there'll be nothing left to it. That's what he tried to do. And with Litzanus, he was successful. And as a result of all this, finally the next day came, Moshe Rabbeinu tried to do his best to try to appeal to his rebellious group over there, and he tried to make peace with them. He went to Dasam Vaviram and tried to make peace with them, and they were very, very chutzpahdik, very, very disrespectful. And finally, at the end of this whole scene, Moshe Rabbeinu appealed to Hashem, and he said, look, I haven't done anything wrong to them, and Hashem should punish them with a punishment that has never been yet put on this earth. And the pasuk says, "Vayihika chalosa ledaber is kol hadvarim ha'ela." As Moshe Rabbeinu has finished speaking all of these things, "Vatibaka adama asher tachtehem," the ground underneath split underneath them. "Vatiftacha oretz es pia," and the ground opened up its mouth. "Vativla oisam," and swallowed them up. "Ves batayim," and their homes. "Ves kol adam," and all their people. "Asher lekorach," which was to Korach. Everything. They went into the grave alive. And the ground covered them up. And they were permanently lost from the people, from the congregation. Here we see what it means to have an inflated ego, to have it take control over you and see what this craving for kavod can do to a person. Here's a man that had all the honor in the world that he could have imagined, yet he wanted more. He wanted even more. It's comparable to the story of Haman. Haman had all the honor he wanted in the world, except he didn't have the honor of Mordechai bowing down to him. That was so important to him that he created such a scene that he had to make a decree to kill every Jew, man, woman, and child, because he didn't get what he wanted. Korach followed the same footsteps, except he was many, many generations earlier. He had a craving for honor. This paralyzed him. He couldn't see what he was doing. It didn't make him see the truth. In his crooked thinking and in his mind, he was able to see that he, in the future, there were great people coming out of his children, such as Shmuel HaNavi and other great members of Klal Yisrael. And he said, how could that be if I'm wrong? It must be that I am right in my rebellion. And therefore, what happened was he ended up losing everything. The famous pasuk, the famous Mishnah, I should say, in Pirkei Avos, Hakina, Hataiva, Hakovod, Motzina, Sa'odim, Min Ha'olam. This jealousy, we said the lust, and the craving for kavod will take a person out of his world, can kill a person. And here's the story of how it killed the wealthiest person in the world, and the one who had gotten already the most honor that one could imagine on his level. My Rosh Yeshiva, Chaim Dov Keller Shliza, I actually heard it myself when I was in the Shir in the Telz Yeshiva. He quoted the famous Mishnah in Avos, in Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yugimel, Negid Shema Avad Shemei. A name earned is unrightfully is Avad Shemei, who loses his own name. It's a very strange term. It should be really reading Negid Shema Avad Shema or Negid Shemei Avad Shemei. But it doesn't say that. It said Negid Shema, a name earned unrightfully, Avad Shemei, who loses his own name. So what happened over here? He wanted to gain the honor of being the Nasi of Shevet Levi. He really intended to want to become Kohen Gadol. But at least he was going to settle for Nasi of Shevet Levi. But he pursued it unjustly. The result was disaster. Avad Shemei, he lost his own name that he really earned rightfully. How in the world could a man who wasn't a tzaddik, who wasn't a talmid chacham, who wasn't righteous, who wasn't a holy person, be able to carry the aron as his job? Yet, if a person has a craving for kavod, it paralyzes him, and he can't see right from wrong. All he sees is himself. He's so consumed with his desire for honor and glory, he can't see anything else. We see over here, throughout this entire episode, such a sad, sad situation that happened to Klal Yisrael. So sad. Because at this time, Klal Yisrael was suffering already from being put down for the story of the Meraglim. And now they're suffering another put down, that now Korach has started this rebellion. We all know that this whole story from Korach, the Torah has already had said something in advance. There was some hint to all of this beforehand. We know that Yaakov Avinu foresaw that this was going to happen. And when he blessed the children and he got to Levi, he said to Levi, "Besoda maltavo nafshi," in their gathering, "my soul shall not come ubekaholam al techad kavodi," and they're in the kahal of Korach, in their congregation, "my name shall not be mentioned. Ubekaholam al techad kavodi." Yaakov Avinu foresaw that this was going to happen. He didn't even want his name to be associated to this. That's how disgusting this was, and that's what kind of a crippling effect it had on Klal Yisrael. We also know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, at the beginning of creation, by Sheshish and May Bereshis, already foresaw that there was going to be a need for this miracle. We know there were Sarah Devarim Nivru Be'erav Shabbos Bein Hashmashos. There were 10 things that created by twilight, Erev Shabbos, at the beginning of the world, before the first Shabbos. The Elohein, and these are they, and the very first one of the 10 is Pi Ha'aretz, the opening of the ground. The opening of the ground that swallowed Korach was already predestined, the beginning of creation. Another very, very interesting thing. The Medrash Bereshis, Medrash Dalid Pasuk Vav, talks about a very interesting thing. On the second day of creation, there is no mentioning of Toiv. It says Ki Toiv on every other day. But on the second day, it doesn't say Toiv. What does it say in the second day? There shall be a sky put in the middle of the waters, and it should separate between the waters above and the waters below. And Hashem has made the rakia, and he separated the waters from below the heavens, in order to sustain a world, Hashem had to separate the waters. He had to make a machloikis. He had to separate. He had to divide them. And machloikis was on the second day. And it's interesting to note that since in the second day there was machloikis, even though Hashem had to divide the water, otherwise the world couldn't survive, or with it being water everywhere, but there was no blessing, there is no mentioning of Toiv. However, there is an interesting thing that also is mentioned, and that is the shear of the mizmor of the Yom Hayom Yom Sheni. We say Hayom Yom Sheni LeShabbos is sheer mizmor of Nei Korach. It's a mizmor dedicated to Korach. When was that mizmor mentioned? On Yom Sheni. Why Yom Sheni? Was the day that Hashem had to make a division, had to make a machlokes in order to put the world into motion, and because that was the day that Hashem made a machlokes, that's the day we say Shir Mizmor Livnei Korach. Again, Korach is already uppermost in the mind of Hashem, and we know for that reason doesn't say the word Tov. I saw a very interesting explanation by a Rabbi Zev Weinberger, Shlita, explaining why did Yaakov not want his name to be mentioned. Like, what was wrong that the lineage should be mentioned? So I'll read you what I read from this rabbi. It's a very beautiful explanation. And he writes the following. He explains that Yaakov's life had been marked by controversy. From birth, he was battling Esav, the conflict with the Lavan, followed by the anguish over his daughter, Dinah, constantly fighting. That was with Shechem. It was a life, the continuation of fighting against evil, confronting it head on. Yaakov feared that people might err and think Korach had assumed the mantle of fighting against evil, that he was following in the footsteps of his distinguished ancestor, Yaakov. Yaakov sought to dispel this notion. Korach did not seek to uproot evil, to battle the Shem Shemayim for the sake of heaven, to elevate Hashem's name. No, Korach was arrogant and insecure. He sought to undermine Moshe's leadership. He was not a crusader. He was not a warrior for the sake of Hashem. Korach was a Baal Machloikis, a man who pursued dispute as a means of subverting Klal Yisrael's leadership. He was a demagogue who sought to destroy the inherent good that Moshe Rabbeinu infused into people so that he could assume control. Yaakov could not relate to this type of machlekes. Thus, we can understand why he did not want to be included in Korach's lineage, because Korach would use this as ammunition to fight against Moshe Rabbeinu. You say, I get the strength from my great, great Zaydi, Yaakov. No. Yaakov did not want that to happen. And so we see what had happened. Korach, who wanted to get everything, end up losing everything. So we see how the Torah speaks about Korach and how he lost everything that he tried to gain. But the truth of the matter is, Korach's fight is not over. Korach, his message, his influence, unfortunately lives on. The repercussions of Korach perhaps could be compared to an extent to the repercussions of Amalek. What am I trying to get at? Amalek, in his first attack of Klal Yisrael, completely, without any reason, right? It was out to destroy Kedusha. We're told that he opened up the floodgates of the world to try to fight and tamper with Klal Yisrael. No one had the audacity to go ahead and even attempt to try to attack Klal Yisrael and to fight with them. But Amalek did it, even though he was hurt, even though he was defeated. But he taught the world it's possible. It's possible to hurt Klal Yisrael. We suffer from Amalek till today. We are facing a similar repercussions of Korach. My Rosh Hashiva, Reb Chaim Dov Keller Shlita, and I heard it myself, he said that Korach was the first Reformed Jew. He wanted to make his own party. He wanted to go ahead and make a Democratic party. Who says we have to listen to Moshe? We were all there at the same time. Why do we have to obey what Moshe is saying? And through his devious plans of trying to destroy and demolish the awe, respect, and reverence that Klal Yisrael had for Moshe Rabbeinu, he succeeded in at least making a terrible crack with his vicious behavior, a crack in the foundation of Klal Yisrael. Not up until a few hundred years ago, the Jewish people have never been separated in different movements. There always used to be two groups in Klal Yisrael: those who observed the Torah and those who didn't observe the Torah. We had that in the desert. There were the Erevav and the Erevav's cohorts who helped the Erevav with their devious behavior. We know that. There were people who in the time of, let's say, Mordechai and Esther, they fought against Mordechai and Esther. And they didn't want to follow all the dictates of the Chachamim that were supposed to be adhered to. It's not new. The Jewish people always had different groups who were not adherent. They were part of those who didn't observe. At the time of Hanukkah, same thing. We had the Perushim, and we had the Misyavnim. Well, this is not new to us. But until around 1700s, right, the Jewish people all were fairly united and lived humbly, also lived very low lifestyle. And what were they were in their ghettos, and they were able to live as religious and faithful Jews, even in poverty. But what happened at the beginning of the 1700s, the world was beginning to change. And I have over here, I'm reading from a history book written by Rabbi Chaim Schloss. The title of the book is 2,000 Years of Jewish History from the Destruction of the Second Beis Hamikdash until the 20th Century. And I want to read a little bit of it, and I think it's important to hear this. The situation of the Jew in exile underwent tremendous changes. Materialism beckoned. At the same time, the walls of the ghettos both figuratively and literally began to develop cracks and finally fell, offering incredible new opportunities that had never even existed before in Jewish life. As long as the Jews had remained locked in their tightly woven life of their communities, they had remained largely impervious to the outside influences. Now, however, the twin dangers of open horizons and sudden interest in material wealth led to a real danger of assimilation. With each new and different progression, the Jews found themselves coping with new crises and new problems, some of which are still begging for a solution today. There was a gentleman by the name of Moses Mendelssohn at that time who was at the time, born to a very firm family. He had a very firm ancestors. He's in the family of the Ramah, Rabbi Moshe Israelis. He was himself a very knowledgeable person, but he was attracted to start the Reform movement. Until now, there were groups. There were those who were observant and those who were not observant, but there was never a movement. The non-observant didn't have a movement to who to recognize. They felt they were the fringe, even though that they didn't want to belong to the observant, but they were the fringe. Now they no longer became a fringe. They became a movement. And I'll just read you one paragraph, and with this we have to wind down. Mendelssohn's first act of reform seemed to be little more than a minor infraction of halacha practice. The Prussian government had decreed that no one should be buried before waiting a period of 3 days after his death. Jews, on the other hand, follow the dictum of the Torah, which states, "For you should bury him on the same day." Mendelssohn, in his efforts to avoid antagonizing the Prussian government, felt that the Jewish practice of burying the deceased without delay should be put aside. The Jews in Berlin ought to abide by government orders. In fact, you know, Dina de Malchus Dina, the law of the government is law. As mentioned in the Gemara, only it applies if it doesn't contradict to the Torah law. The matter was brought to the attention of the German rabbinic leaders, who obviously decided against Mendelssohn. In spite of a number of sharp letters of protest and reprimand, Mendelssohn stubbornly maintained his position, declaring that he was competent enough to disagree with the Torah sages of his day. The rebellion against Das Torah may seem insignificant, but it was the beginning of a breakdown of halachic discipline, which opened the door to more serious breaches, serving as an example to Mendelssohn's followers. With Mendelssohn's death, a campaign of systematic reform began. We are really talking about Koyrach. Koyrach was the first reformed Jew. Koyrach was the one who said, "We don't have to listen to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu made it up. It's not for us to obey him." He was the one that put the crack in the foundation of Klal Yisrael. And even though Korach is long gone, we are suffering because of Korach. The story of Korach is the story that we are reliving today. We have to do whatever we can to obey to the mitzvahs of our Chachamim. We have to adhere to him, adhere to everything that they tell us to do. We have to get into the habit of asking Rabbanim questions that concern us. And there are answers to the questions that are asked most of the time. But we have to realize that our leaders, our Torah leaders, our connection, our liaison to Moshe Rabbeinu, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we have to stay on track and never to deviate. And to realize that if anyone gets involved with machlokes, machlokes is a recipe for a disaster. We once mentioned already, machlokes brings a person to social destruction. He's unhappy. His family is unhappy. His community is unhappy. He gets sick, and he's definitely not a successful person as a person, as a Baal Machlokes. If a person wants to avoid a Machlokes, I heard a tremendous idea. Let's make a Shalom account. This story about a man by the name of Mordechai Schwab Zatzal, who had a very large account stored away, and he had to borrow a lot of money to do something which was important for himself, for personal things. And his family said, "Why don't you go to your account? You have money stored away. We know that." He said, No. "That account is a Shalom account." "What's a Shalom account?" they asked. "A Shalom account is you put away money that if you ever have an argument about anything that has to do with finances, and you know you are 100% right, give in. And the money that you lose, you take from the Shalom account, the money you put aside, that you said, whenever I feel that I was dealt unrightful and unjust, I'll take it from this account." Chofetz Chaim also had a Shalom account. Why get into a petty machlokes that makes your life miserable? You have a Shalom account, I'll take the money from the Shalom account, and I'll be peace at my friends. A person has to try to be mevater, try to give in. and a person has to never forget. Ein kli machzik bracha kishalom. There is no greater vessel in the world that has in it blessing more than the blessing of peace. May we all be blessed with peace, with our friends, our families, and our community. Have a wonderful week.